Globotics. Globotics. Richard Baldwin is one of the world's leading globalization experts, and he argues that inhuman speed of the transformation of globotics threatens to overwhelm our capacity to adapt. When technology enables people from around the world to be a virtual presence in any given office, globotics will disrupt the lives of millions of skilled workers much faster than automation, industrialization, and globalization disrupted people's lives in previous centuries. Here to join me live on the line from an airport somewhere, I believe, near Switzerland or in Switzerland, is Richard Baldwin. Richard, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And whereabouts do we find you on the planet today?
Geneva Airport, actually. I'm on the way to Washington, D.C.
Explain to me a little, if you would, what globotics actually is or globotics actually are.
Sure. So globotics is an ugly but hopefully memorable word that smashes together globalization and robotics. And what I wanted to do by inventing this very ugly word, everybody hates it, is to remind people that this time around, globalization and automation of jobs is coming at the same time. Whereas in previous waves, we would get automation of factories, and then 20 years later, it changed globalization. And, you know, the going way back to the 18th century, there was a century between when automation started. These are coming at the same time, and they're focusing on the same jobs. And those jobs are very different than what happened before. It's the service sector and professional jobs, not manufacturing jobs and agricultural jobs like the last time.
So what we're looking at then is perhaps is more service center jobs. So, for example, your automated checkout in the supermarket, that sort of thing?
Exactly. So that's the automation side or the robotic side. It's digital automation. It's really basically software. So these computers have learned to do things they never could do before, like read and write and understand simple patterns and talk and create, you know, PowerPoints and slideshows and things like that. And so we're starting to see some service sector jobs automated. But what I would focus on is it's not just checkout counters or passport control. It's also jobs in the legal profession with there's robo-lawyers or in the journalist profession with robo-journalism writers. So they don't take over the whole job, they just do part of it, so you need fewer people to do the same amount of work. And at the same time, globalization is opening up to direct competition from people sitting abroad. So somebody sitting, for example, in Kenya could be working in an office in, for example, London, providing some services for much cheaper than before. So that's, in essence, importing labor services directly without the people actually leaving their country. And both of those are affecting professional and service jobs in a way that's coming incredibly fast.
You describe that as telemigration, which I think is a great word.
Yeah, I mean, basically that's what it is. So, or, you know, there's lots of words for it. It's a lot of people work from home and they call it remote work or teleworking. But this is just that done by international people. International freelancing is another word for it. And there's great big platforms that help the companies in Europe and the United States and Australia or wherever hook up with, you know, highly qualified professionals who charge much less on sites like Upwork or Freelancer, things like that.
One of the things is, of course, that the fact that the workplace has changed in such a, as you said a bit earlier, in such a fundamental way over the past 20 years, the past two decades. You know, I was born in the 60s, I grew up in the 70s, was schooled in the 70s and the 80s, and we were still believing in, I mean, I remember the ZX80 computer being bought into school, which will date me, and since that time, say 40, 50 years ago, we were being trained for jobs that really no longer exist and a workplace that no longer exists.
Absolutely. So let me just put my finger at a risk of getting a tiny bit technical. What really, really changed is how we program computers. So in the old days, in the 70s, when you and I were in school, we had to write a computer program to make a computer do something. And that meant in order for us to teach the computer, we actually really had to fully understand logical step by logical step exactly what the computer should do. And that's why computers, until very recently, couldn't recognize objects, because we actually don't know how we recognize a cat as a cat versus a dog. But what's happened since 2016 is this machine learning revolution. And what that does is the computer scientists set up a way for the computer to use vast amounts of data to construct a model which allows it to guess. And it can get very, very good at that. So that's why optical characteristic recognition or recognizing handwriting and turning it into regular things or facial recognition, that's gotten so good because the computers are programming themselves in essence by estimating a statistical model with an algorithm. But that requires insane amounts of processing power and insane amounts of data. And until really 2016, that wasn't feasible except in relatively small ways.
That's
basically given computers some skills that they never had before, and some of those skills are very useful in the workplace. And so these computers are going to start helping us doing our jobs, which means automating part of our jobs, which means some workers will be displaced. I mean, there'll be lots of job creation in the future, I'm sure, but the focus in the next few years of all the AI geniuses is to create software robots that replace jobs. And on the other side, the globalization, the telemigrants will most definitely be replacing some task in offices. But it'll go very subtly. It won't be like all of a sudden this shut down an insurance building and everybody's fired. It's one gradual task done, one cost savings at a time. But over a couple of years, it will lead to a significant transformation of how the offices work and how foreigners integrate into our office working.
The thing is, I mean, we were used to marveling and going, oh, isn't that amazing on, for example, car production lines where we saw the robots putting together, you know, Fiats or Nissans or whatever they were. But this is an entirely different thing because we're now seeing, as you said, there are robo-lawyers taking over certain aspects of the legal profession, robo-journalists. And as a freelance writer myself, I can only shudder, taking over some aspects of putting together articles. And this creates a new wave.
If I could jump in there,
please
your
do.
Job's safe. Because, you see, these computers and the telemigrants can't do the most human things like you're doing right now. There's no way that anybody would want to listen to a computer-generated thing because it's your color and your humor, the fact that you know what your readers want and you can dialogue with a human quickly. See, computers aren't going to be doing that. What they're going to be doing is helping you transcribe this and put it on the web instantaneously or almost instantaneously, and then put it into three or four different languages, whatever you want. It'll be tasks like that that will replace. But the most human of our skills, they can't do yet. And so those are the kind of things which will be safe.
Some would beg to differ, Richard. Some of my listeners would be delighted with a computer taking over my job, but there you go. But what does this mean? Because we will look at some people going on to be being displaced by artificial intelligence, by computers that think and can do their jobs, by globotics. You point out that this might be lead to destabilizing upheaval.
Yeah. So I'm a big optimist in the long run. I think all this internationalization of services, you know, telemigration plus software robots and automation in the workplace, I think that will lead us to have jobs which are more human, more local, will be richer, so hopefully will be more generous. Societies will be tighter because everybody will be working together. But in the short run, there's an issue of the speed, the mismatch of the job displacement and the job creation. So the job displacement is being driven at this explosive pace of digital technology, whereas the job replacement is being driven at the leisurely pace of human creativity and entrepreneurship. And I'm quite sure that we will create all the jobs we need, just like we did over the last two centuries of transformation. But the question is will we be able to create them fast enough? Now, what I'm really worried about is in many rich countries, especially the United States, it's basically a powder keg where people are really, really upset. Most of those people are blue-collar workers or middle-class workers. And this is just going to add on a whole bunch of people who are also upset, but from the white-collar and professional class. And if the white-collar people who are upset about this join the blue-collar people who are upset about it, we could have quite a mighty upheaval, not unlike the one we saw like in 1989 against globalization, but much larger. Or another way to think about it is what if the office workers join the yellow vest protest? That sort of stuff could spread very fast, and I think people are really feeling anxious and anxiety, and this might lead to a sort of a backlash against big tech or some sort of automation or generalized upset. So that's what I'm worried about in the short run, and I'm talking about the next 5 years.
I mean, I do a current affairs program every Tuesday. One of the things that I hear all the time, people call in, is they are anti-globalization. You talk about the yellow jackets. It's, you know, globalization is seen as a quote-unquote bad thing. So how does anybody put the brakes on a globalized company saying, well, we're going to use tele-immigrants from Kenya. We're going to use call centers from India. We're going to use robots that can think for themselves and get rid of the more menial tasks. How can you put a brakes on a massive global company?
Sure. So let me just pour water on one stupid idea, which is taxing the robots. So that's misunderstanding. These things are not robots in the sense of like science fiction movies. These are just software. So that's like saying we're going to tax the Excel spreadsheets or something. So that won't work. I think there's really two ways, and one you already see quite significantly. I like to call it shelterism, where workers in a particularly affected area band together and they use existing regulations to slow it down. So like say Uber has faced taxi drivers in many cities, and a lot of times they use regulation of taxis to slow down the implementation of Uber, sometimes even completely ban it with regulation. So I think this shelterism, as I like to call it, it'll use health, safety, environmental, but above all privacy regulations to prevent foreigners from working in our offices. And I'll give you a very concrete example. Here in Switzerland, we have very strong privacy laws for the bank, secrecy laws. And so the bank gets fined hundreds of thousands of client data accidentally goes outside of Switzerland. So as a result, the banks do no backshore stuff in India or anywhere else because they just can't take the risk of it leaving. So that's an example of a privacy regulation preventing telemigration. And you could imagine that being dialed up in a number of other ways. So that's plan A, and I'm sure we'll see lots more of it, people using regulation. Self-drive cars, they'll use regulation to slow it down, et cetera. But plan B, I mean, if the thing really starts to spin out of control and we start to see yellow vest-like protest spreading across the world, the governments will have to take a more radical effect, and that means they could just make it hard to fire people. Every country in the world, in the advanced world, has rules about how you fire people, and they vary across countries. Some are very strict, some are not. And if they just simply dialed up the cost of firing somebody, they would automatically slow down firms' interest in replacing people. So that's that would have terrible unintended consequences, but we do know how to slow this down. So if it really comes to a dire situation, what I call the nuclear option, that is on the table. People could just make it very hard to fire workers. Therefore, they would slow down the implementation of the automation and using foreign workers instead of domestic workers.
It's interesting you bring up that thing about Uber and Cabify, because here in Spain we have had in Madrid and Barcelona taxi drivers on strike for almost a month now against this new technology coming in because they are concerned for their jobs and the new technology. Is it a case of perhaps we need to educate as well and our workforce so that they can adapt and still be valued in the workplace?
Yeah, so that's the best, you know, if the government could stand ready and say, okay, technology on the whole is a good thing for society, but there's an issue of who pays for the adjustment costs. And in some countries, and the assumption is that it's the workers who are going to pay the adjustment costs. The firms just fire people. Workers take care of themselves. And that's probably not the optimal way of dealing with such a large change. So if the government sort of stood ready to help them acquire new skills and things like that, that's the most sensible way of going about it. But if that doesn't work, they may have to try other things. So in the particular case of the taxi drivers, I've understood it hasn't worked very well. But that's just a question of political will. And if things got, you know, crazy enough, then the government certainly has the tools to slow down the implementation of Uber. Maybe they choose not to do it, but a lot of people say this is irresistible, we can't do anything about it. That's just not true. We have the tools to slow it down.
You'll be speaking in Oxford a little bit later on this month about this very subject, globalization, robotics, and the future of work. How do we, has anybody out there in a white-collar job, middle class, because the talk is going to be about how this may undermine the foundations of middle-class prosperity in the West. How do we go about making sure that we are not going to be undermined by the globotics upheaval?
Well, so, I mean, I think of there as sort of being three key rules, and the first one is the old rules won't work. So the old way of adjusting to this was to get more skills. All you had to do is get more training, more education, and you're more likely to end up in a job where there was no competition from foreigners and there was no thinking computers, so it couldn't be automated. So this simple-minded, get more skills, I think that's too blunt. So I think, you know, basically you should try and think hard, what could telemigrants do? And then try and build your skills in things that they can't do. So, for example, they can't actually be in the room and provide empathy and creativity and management and all those sorts of things. So you should try and build up your skills in those. In other words, try and avoid building up skills where you're going to be competing directly with low-cost, talented foreigners sitting abroad. And the same thing was with automation. And by the way, to tell what's going on, look around your office and see who's telecommuting. Which jobs can be done by domestic telemigrants or telecommuters? Those are the first ones that are going to go international, or not all of them, because some of them involve local culture. But you can already tell some of the jobs are easy to do remotely, and it's those ones who are going to be impacted by foreign competition first. And then on automation, what you got to do is look at what can't machine learning do. And you got to spend some time looking at this. There's an excellent McKinsey Global Institute report, which goes through what AI can and can't do. And sort of just grossly oversimplifying, these computers aren't good at the most human tasks. So things that it are like pattern-based, experience-based pattern recognition that a lot of lawyers and stuff do, that's what machine learning does very, very well. But say negotiating the sale of a house in a very human way, or negotiating a deal, or managing and motivating a team, or educating kids, those are things that the computers are not good at because they're really social skills, and so far AI is not very good at these social interactions. So do what the AI can't do, and do what the telerobots can't. So, telemigrants can't do.
So basically, before we all become sort of neo-Luddites and go around smashing up any system that we can get our hands on, then we should be looking at brushing up on our social skills and on our humanity, then, Richard.
Exactly. And by the way, the people who, it may be too late for you and me because we're in the older generation, but the guys who are really going to rock this are people like at firms like Snapchat or WhatsApp, where these are a small group of people, typically in the same room or in the same building, and they use telemigrants and they use AI to dial up their skills to create amazing things. So for people who know how to use these things, this is a force multiplier. So what you really want to do is learn how to use these tools and put together teams of people who can do amazing things quickly at a very variable scale. And that's the ones we're actually going to win from this the most.
When you sat down to write the book, The Globotics Upheaval, obviously this is a positive book. This is a book which has sort of warnings for us all, but it's not so much a sort of Skynet is crashing down on us. It is more, adapt, know what's coming up, and therefore you can be ready for it.
Absolutely. I'm very concerned that people just aren't taking this seriously enough. I find two groups of people, even among the relatively sophisticated policy types. There's some of them who are just totally unaware of how fast this is coming and how much it's changed, just because it is changed so fast. And then there's a whole bunch of other ones who are completely in denial of how fast it's going to come because they find it convenient to kick the can down the road and let somebody else deal with it. So what I'm writing with this book is, I feel like I'm going down to the village square and ringing a bell, like, this thing is for real. You've got to adapt. You've got to pay attention. And it's not going to be a disaster, I don't think. It certainly doesn't have to be. But it's coming faster than most people think and in ways most people don't expect. And so I think people just got to think hard about this. And the last kind of point that I really want to make is this is about service sector and professional jobs, not manufacturing. And a huge amount of thinking about the future of all this stuff harks back to how it happened in the last 20 years in factories and on farms, where automation was huge and competition from China was huge. This is going to happen to a whole different set of workers, and they are not prepared for it because it's never happened to them before.
The book is called The Globotics Upheaval. It's by Richard Baldwin. It's out now on W&N. Richard, if people want to find out more about you or discuss some of the issues, where can they find you? Do you have a website? Is there a social media presence?
Well, yes, there's a lot. Actually, if you just type Richard Baldwin into Google, I'm usually the first one that comes up, and I have a whole series of sites. So.
And it only begs the question, what are you going to be doing next? I know you're flying to Washington. You'll be talking in Oxford a bit later on in the month. What's next in your sights?
So this coming 2 weeks, I'm going to do D.C., a couple talks in New York, three talks in L.A., four talks in the Bay Area, a talk in Boston. Then I do Geneva, Brussels, London, Oxford, and Greece. That's this month.
A busy man then, and probably not a job that can be taken up by a Globot then, Richard, I'd say.
Well, part of it I wish could be done, like the flying.
The book is called The Globotics Upheaval, Globalization, Robotics, and the Future of Work. It's out now. It's by Richard Baldwin. Richard, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.